It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by Gordon Ridge.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show at Locked On Rockets, and of course the blog at ClutchCityCR. Now, joining us in today's show to continue some thoughts from game one and to help preview game two in the series is Sports Illustrated's Michael Shapiro. Michael, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Dude, I'm good. I'm excited after a game one Rockets win, and you know, just looking forward to seeing how this series really plays out. Because personally, for me, and we'll get into this in detail, but for me coming into the series, I feel like a lot of the pressure was on the Rockets. You know, the Thunder, it's like they're not even supposed to be here, right? They had the 0.2% chance to make the playoffs at the start of the season. So anything that the Thunder accomplish is just a cherry on top of an already unexpected season. And in a season where they're probably going to look to maybe even, you know, probably deal Chris Paul to somebody else this summer. You know, they're just, you know, continuing to try and beef up his value in this playoff run. Kind of, you know, he's putting on a showcase, I guess, to show other teams, other, you know, legitimate contenders that he is, you know, worth a potential trade, things of that nature. But just in general, coming into game one, how did you think things felt from a Rockets lens, and kind of what were some of your impressions from that game one?
Yeah, you know, I think it was a pretty ideal game one for the Rockets. It's hard to really look at it any other way. I think you make a good point that kind of going into the series, I think, you know, maybe not for the Rockets themselves, but I think the general public, there was some worry among Rockets fans. You know, it was kind of starting to tighten the screws a little bit as the series approached. But I think we really saw the best of the Rockets on both ends in Tuesday's victory. James Harden led all scorers with 37 points. I mean, there was a lot of bench production. Eric Gordon looked spry. And on the defensive end, I think was even more encouraging. Just slowing that three-guard lineup as much as Houston did, I think was really impressive. And I think the Rockets could make this kind of a short series, especially if they repeat game one's performance here.
You know, so my initial predictions going into the series, I had Rockets in six, and I genuinely thought that each game, especially the games without one Russell Westbrook, I thought that those games were going to be a lot closer. I thought that, you know, as far as the talent level, obviously with no Russ, the Rockets are much closer in match. Even you can make the argument that OKC is more talented without Russell Westbrook out there on the court for the Rockets. And so I was just far and away blown away by the commanding game one victory and the fact that they went out there and even without Russ, they looked like they were in control for so much of the game. Now, just I never got a chance to see, what were your predictions for the team headed into the series?
Yeah, you know, I actually had the same as you. I thought Rockets in six. You know, I think it was kind of a situation where Oklahoma City could steal a few games. I kind of think, obviously, they still could steal a few games. But it seemed as though James Harden was really trending in a nice direction heading into the series. And if they're not going to double, I think it could certainly be a quick series. We might talk about that later. But I just kind of thought the Rockets, despite their injuries, their offense was certainly humming. They were the number three defense in the bubble after that first game against Dallas. So it kind of had the profile of a top five, top seven team. And while, you know, Oklahoma City's had a really nice year, I still think there is a talent gap without Westbrook out.
Yeah, and one guy that actually really surprised me in this game was Ben McLemore and just his production off the bench and how good he looked. And this is something that I didn't spend I probably didn't spend enough time highlighting this in the original recap of the game. But, you know, Ben McLemore's a guy where you hear a lot of Rockets fans, you know, really concerned with, okay, is Ben McLemore even playable come playoff time? You know, can you put him out there against some, you know, more elite offenses or against some of the more staunch like playoff competition and have him not be taken advantage of on the defensive side of the court? I think one thing that we saw in this first game was that with everybody so honed in defensively, you're able to get away with Ben McLemore, who still isn't a phenomenal defensive player, but when he's out there with four other guys who are that locked in defensively, where, to quote some of the Rockets coaching staff, kind of talking about needing everybody to be tied on a string together, where when one guy moves, everybody moves. That way, you know, when you're initiating those scram switches, you know, so that the guards aren't stuck on bigs like Gallinari or Steven Adams after the initial pick at the top, at the elbow or whatever, just paying attention with all that defensive communication, it allows a guy like Ben McLemore to be out there and to not be a detriment defensively when the other four guys are so locked in. And then he's able to go out there and do exactly what he did in game one and be a spark off the bench offensively and just light it up from behind the arc.
Yeah. I mean, certainly when you have a unit with kind of four strong wing defenders, you know, McLemore is a guy that you can hide at least to a degree. And I also think an important point is the Thunder don't really quite have a player that can punish Ben McLemore, you know, time and again on switches. We saw in some Lakers matchups that LeBron James kind of attacked him at will. That's something we might have to deal with in the next series. But I think, you know, against the Thunder, it's not as though McLemore's defensive shortcomings will really impact the series all that much, in my opinion. And as you said, I don't think there's really that many jump shots in basketball that are prettier than Ben McLemore's. He's always been a really impressive shooter. Obviously, he hasn't put it together in Sacramento, but in this system, playing as fast as the Rockets do, you know, he has the ultimate green light and he's really making the most of it.
Now, in the Rockets' most recent media availability, Mike D'Antoni, did he have an update kind of on Russell Westbrook and how he's progressing with his injury?
Yeah, you know, so Westbrook was just ruled out for game two. D'Antoni didn't give a direct timeline. You know, he's kind of avoided the question. He did say it feels like it'll be a few days. I think it's a situation where the Rockets are going to be cautious regardless of how it is in the series right now against Oklahoma City, but especially if it goes up 2-0, I think the chances kind of increase that Russell Westbrook will miss the entire series. It seems as though it's the kind of injury where the Rockets are going to do all they can to avoid playing Westbrook unless it's really tight late. And I think it is a thing where he's going to be at least two more games away, if I had to guess.
You know, and in the absence of Russell Westbrook, and correct me if I'm wrong here, just, but you know, I want to hear your opinion on this. I think without Russell Westbrook, this is probably the best matchup for the Rockets to not have Westbrook available, if only because what it allows you to do is you're able to attack OKC with just the spacing that you get alongside, you know, four shooters surrounding Harden. They're not really able, and this will be the interesting thing moving into game two, is if OKC decides to switch things up and actually double team Harden instead of letting him, you know, using single coverage for the most part on him, how will the shooters be able to be reliable? They shot 38.5% as a team in game one. Can they keep that up? Because when the magic number being 37%, when they shoot over 37%, they're 25-1. So if they can shoot over 37%, then they're going to be a hard team to beat. But I think without Russell Westbrook, this is probably the best matchup because it allows the Rockets to space the court. The teams can't load up on James Harden. There isn't really the ability for them to then, you know, position and force Russ to be the guy to beat you in a 4-on-3 environment by double teaming James. So, I mean, am I alone in that feeling? Do you think that if there was a time for Russ to miss, this is probably the most optimal time?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of a lack of dynamism, I think, from the OKC roster, all due respect to them. I think an interesting point here going into game two is how much are the Thunder going to double team James Harden? You know, the Rockets really shot the lights out outside of Harden on Tuesday night, but I still think that the move is to double James Harden, don't let him get into a rhythm, and really make the Rocket shooters continuously, time and again throughout the series, kind of be knockdown shooters. I understand you might get beat that way, but I think single coverage on Harden, you know, no matter kind of really which perimeter defender you have, it isn't the smartest call. I think with the Rockets' offense really started rolling in that third quarter when James Harden started rolling, and he was the real catalyst, I think, for all these open jumpers. I think you have to force other people to create those jump shots.
Most definitely. And you know, coming up, I want to kind of dive into this a little bit further. Talk about that nightmare lineup from OKC and a potential adjustment that I see from OKC's side of things. But first, I want to let you guys know that you can start your morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes. Axios Today host Nyla Boodoo and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insight into the trends shaping our world. It's this wonderful little 10-minute podcast that you can make include it in the start of your day, kind of get a feel for what's going on in the world around you. And I highly recommend you checking it out. I've made it a part of my morning routine. I suggest you do as well. And also, I want to drop in a quick word from our friends over at rockauto.com. One reason to repair and maintain your car is to save money that you can then use for other important things like a mortgage or food or, you know, your apartment rent, whatever it may be. Why would you choose? Why would you willingly choose to spend 30, 50, 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or a brand new car dealership? It doesn't make any sense. At rockauto.com, prices are always reliably low, and they're the exact same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why would you want to spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts? And look, they have everything that you can imagine. They've got all the stuff you need, from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even brand new carpets. So whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, you can get everything that you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. And look, best of all, rockauto.com, it's a family business, and there's no better feeling than supporting a family business who's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. So go to rockauto.com right now to see all the parts available for your car or truck. And be sure, don't forget this part, do me a favor, write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. And we're back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Be sure, if you're not already doing it, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, so you can get it as soon as possible, even before I start, you know, ranting about it on Twitter and all my social media. So, chatting with Michael Shapiro from Sports Illustrated. Michael, one of the adjustments, and I want to pitch this to you and see kind of where your thought process is on this. I think that, one, we saw two different versions of that OKC nightmare lineup, and I have the stats pulled up right now. So, end of the second quarter, we saw the traditional version of that OKC nightmare lineup, the one with Chris Paul, Dennis Schroeder, SGA, Danilo Gallinari, and Steven Adams. And in that stretch, OKC posted a 130.8 offensive rating, but their defensive rating was also terrible at 127.3. So their offense finally picked up during that stretch, but they still couldn't defend at all with that lineup on the court. And then later on, to kind of wrap up the game as kind of a final push near that tail end of that fourth quarter, they had their nightmare lineup, but they swapped out Steven Adams for Mike Muscala. And in that stretch, it was a 3-minute stretch on the court where the Thunder had a 142.9 offensive rating and then a 66.7 defensive rating. So here's my thing is, does Steven Adams get played off the court based on how poorly they were able to defend? That, you know, basically he wasn't able to defend, and to a lesser extent, Nerlens Noel as well struggled with defending Jeff Green at the five spot. So do you see those guys getting played off the court because of Jeff Green's play at the backup five role?
You know, it's kind of an interesting thing because going into the series, you think, well, Oklahoma City, the size advantage is important. Steven Adams is very important. But I think you make a fair point in that going small really might be the best way to try to go up against these Rockets. You know, Adam just really was not mobile enough. Early in the game, you know, he was kind of a dominant force and he picked up a lot of offensive rebounds. But I think that's kind of just the nature of the game. It was sloppy and scrappy in the first quarter, kind of played to Adams' strength. As we saw as the game developed, right, the Rockets were getting into the lane at will. They were kicking it out to shooters. Adams didn't really know what to do with any of the space he was around. Now, they might not do it wholeheartedly just because what does Billy Donovan have to replace Adams? You know, Mike Muscala, Nerlens Noel, these guys aren't exactly cure-alls to any of their problems. And that kind of speaks to Oklahoma City's biggest problem is they just feel a body or two short. When they have to dip into that bench, you know, you feel like the Rockets actually have a serious advantage, which early in the season I don't think was the case, you know, with many Rockets games. I think that Houston's bench was a little shaky. Now it's really rounded out, which is a credit to Daryl Morey. And I think the rotation right now that Mike D'Antoni has, there's no real weak link to it, which I think has really benefited Houston.
Yeah, and to say that it feels like the Rockets have a deeper team right now, missing one of their starting caliber players, missing their second best player in Russell Westbrook, really is a testament to how, you know, Daryl Morey has been able to round out this roster. Now, that second lineup is the one that is interesting to me, just because the net rating for that lineup, again, it's a tiny little 3-minute sample size, And I do hear what you're saying about Steven Adams and being able to try and find a replacement for him. Now, I'm not saying that Steven Adams is going to get benched. I still think he's going to get his minutes. But potentially, looking at that lineup, having Muscala out there in place of Adams, or potentially even using one of the OKC wings in place of Muscala and then running like Gallinari at your five spot, I just wonder what adjustment Billy Donovan's going to make, because I can't imagine that he's going to be content with watching Jeff Green continue to take advantage of Steven Adams and Nerlens Noel right there at the top of the key. We saw a lot of the way that Jeff Green was bringing the ball up as the point center, essentially, even during times where James Harden was in the game, and it was allowing the Rockets to get into their 21 series offense a lot faster. He was able to come straight out of the corner rather than having to dribble the ball up and eat up some of that shot clock. And I think Gallinari at the five makes the most sense from the, and I'm trying to put myself in the Thunder shoes and figure out, okay, how do you beat this Rockets team? That's what I'm doing right now, because I feel like this is a fun thought experiment. So is that the one that makes the most sense to you?
I was just about to say, that's probably a move that intrigues me most, is just moving Gallinari all the way up to the five. Now, it might not be a cure-all for their issues. It might not swing the series, but I think it's a pretty smart idea. You know, Gallinari was their best player on the floor by a pretty significant margin, in my opinion, on Tuesday night. And I think it's just, he's not really bothered by any Houston defender. You know, sometimes the Rockets will invite post-ups, and it's very smart, especially against bigs who, you know, aren't the most skilled in the world, but Gallinari has the kind of game where he'll pop out to 12 feet, 14 feet. He has weird hooks. You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's still not bothered inside by any of the Rockets. And he might, you know, be able to eat a little bit down low, more so than even Adams, just because of his sheer skill. I think the downsizing is a smart move. Ultimately, I don't know if it's going to be enough to swing the series, though. I'll put it at that.
No, and honestly, you know, at this point, immediately after game one, I'm looking at the box score, right? And I see, okay, Chris Paul almost had a triple-double, you know, 20, 10, and 9. Now, granted, about, 8 points of that 20 came at the very tail end of the game, almost when it was basically out of reach, but they did try to make that final push with that modified nightmare lineup, as previously mentioned. But just, you know, you had Chris Paul had a solid game. Danilo Gallinari had almost 30 points, had basically his way with the Rockets. You know, nobody out there being able to stop him. 9 of 17 shooting, a really efficient night of 9 from the free throw line. And yet they come up so short. And I think a big chunk of that was they got almost no production out of Dennis Schroeder. And I think a large part of that had to do with just not only the Rockets team defense, but also the spot minutes where Austin Rivers was out there matched up with Dennis Schroeder. I think he did a phenomenal job guarding him.
Yeah, I mean, Rivers really did have a stand-up defensive night. He wasn't really all that great offensively, but I do think it was just terrific team defense from the Rockets. You know, the three-guard lineup for OKC, right? It's Paul, Gilgeous, Alexander, and Schroeder. That was outscoring teams by about 28 points per 100 possessions in the regular season. On Tuesday, that trio scored 35 points on 34 shots. You know, it was really a nightmare night for both SGA, you know, and Schroeder. Which really speaks to just the adaptability and the length of the Rockets' wings. I think they really gave him problems. There was just no spacing for Oklahoma City. You know, they really couldn't create any open looks. You know, earlier in the season when it was Capella, right, you often saw Chris Paul time and again getting the switch, attacking Capella and creating space. All of a sudden, if you're on a pick and roll and you're creating a switch to go against PJ Tucker, Robert Covington, that's not an advantageous matchup. So I think the Thunder were kind of spinning their wheels in the half court pretty much all night.
No, for sure. And I think one of the cool things too is, you know, this will be a kind of a side note. How have you enjoyed Stan Van Gundy's, role as commentator during the bubble games?
You know, I actually have. I also like his brother, Jeff, who could be the next Rockets coach. Honestly, I hope not. That's a different conversation. I'll talk about that. But yeah, Stan's kind of delightful. I think I learned a fair amount from him. You know, he's kind of good natured. Sometimes I'm not fully, you listen to the broadcast a little bit if I'm typing or looking something up, but what I've heard from Van Gundy, I do enjoy. Yeah.
He reminds me a lot of when Tony Romo stepped into the broadcast booth, you know, for NFL. And, you know, he really gives some very great insight into the game itself, you know, as for what's going on. He spoke time and time again in this game about how Oklahoma City just, you know, offensively, they just weren't moving. They were stagnant. Nobody was cutting. Nobody was doing anything. And I think that's something that we're going to see a lot more of, probably an emphasis placed on that in game two, is the offense felt so, it was just at a standstill basically. And part of that probably is, and not probably is, it definitely is the Rockets switch everything defense. It causes, you know, it causes problems. It causes, you know, the Thunder not to be able to get into their sets the way that they want. It doesn't have any favorable mismatches, like with Clint Capella, as you pointed out earlier in the season. You know, Chris Paul can't hunt and switch for, you know, a mismatch on an opposing bigs because there are no bigs. You know, the biggest person you got is Jeff Green, and he's more than capable of staying in front of Chris Paul, who, you know, as everybody knows, is getting a little bit long in the tooth, can't quite beat everybody off the dribble the way that he used to be able to. So I think that that is one area of insight that, you know, is going to be an emphasis for the Thunder, is getting some of their guys moving towards the basket, off the ball, trying to generate some type of movement, because largely they just were standing still for the majority of their offensive possessions. And that's a team, it's not like they're suddenly going to be able to get out and transition, you know, a team that was one of the slowest teams in the NBA this year. They're not going to suddenly start playing at a faster pace in the playoffs. You don't just suddenly change your identity once you make it to the postseason. So I'll tell you what, coming up, I want to actually talk a little bit about just some of the other changes that we might see in this next game in the series. But first, I want to drop in a quick word from our friends over at DoorDash. Between never-ending laundry cycles, incoming emails, you know, kids, whatever you've got going on, you've got plenty on your to-do list and not enough on your plate. So you can give yourself one less thing to worry about and let DoorDash take care of your very next meal. Look, DoorDash is the app that brings you food that you are craving right now, right to your door. Look, I cannot count the number of times that I've been at work, you know, you roll out of bed a little bit late. Yeah, you know, you don't have time to stop and make breakfast or pick up breakfast from somewhere else. You get to work, and I'm still one of the people that I'm still going into the office. I'm still going into work at least 4 or 5 times a week. And I cannot count the number of times that I've made it there and I'm there for 45 minutes and my stomach starts rumbling and I am hungry. I'm ready to eat. And you know what I do? I bust out my phone, I grab DoorDash, and I start looking at all the different places nearby. It is awesome. Like just the amount of variety that is on the app. You know, ordering is easy. You can open the app, you choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left right outside your door. Or they have this new contactless delivery drop-off setting where you can choose, hey, I don't want to interact with my driver. I COVID-19, everything going on, I don't want to interact with them. Just drop it off right outside. It's super easy. It's seamless. I use it all the time, and I highly recommend that you do it too. So right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off your order and zero delivery fees on your very first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. So don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your very first order with DoorDash. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for all things Houston Rockets basketball. Now, be sure to stay up to date with the show. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. And of course, you can also check out the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And a quick plug here, definitely want to be tuned in to tomorrow just before the game. We will be having a Zoom party with our friends over at the Houston Sports Talk podcast. So Robert Land over at the Houston Sports Talk podcast will be doing this quick little Zoom party about 30 minutes before the game. So definitely want to swing by, check that out. The links are up on Twitter. I've retweeted them. You can check them out at HST Podcast, that Twitter feed as well. So join us, swing by, ask questions about the game. And then Thursday night after the game, we'll also be doing a live recap with Salman Ali from ESPN 97.5. So definitely want to check that out as well. Now, continuing our conversation here with Michael Shapiro from Sports Illustrated. Michael, heading into this game too, I think we've kind of hammered out some of the potential, you know, some of the areas of this game, of the first game that went by, but largely there weren't really many problem spots to point to if you're a Rockets fan, except for, I think the one area that is causing a lot of concern is Robert Covington. Have you heard anything out of the, you know, out of the coaches or out of the other players about just what's going on with him offensively, or is it just a matter of he's in a shooting funk right now?
You know, it's honestly something that hasn't really been brought up, and I have noticed that, you know, he really had a pretty dreadful shooting stretch in the bubble. He went 1 for 5 from three on Tuesday. You know, I think it's kind of the old axiom, make or miss league. Obviously, it's very, very true for the Rockets. I think that's just kind of how it is for Covington. You know, I think the worst sin he could do is not pull the trigger, not shoot open threes. You know, that's really the thing that'll make Mike D'Antoni upset. You know, this is a team that's willing to continue to let it fly, and I think Covington, if he's open, will do the same. You know, he probably is the weak spot, quote unquote, you know, in the Rockets shooters. But I think he's certainly been serviceable at points in his career. It's also tough because he doesn't really get the corner looks. You know, those are often reserved for PJ Tucker. So it's tough to hit consistent wing and top of the key threes. But he has proven kind of big and clutch moments earlier in the year against the Lakers. He had a pretty big three. So I don't think the Rockets are really worried at all. I personally wouldn't be too worried. Maybe he'll have a rough shooting postseason. That's just the way it goes. But there's nothing specific you can really point to other than he's just missing the looks he's getting right now.
You know, and it first thing that comes to mind is the fact that there was a lineup in the fourth quarter where Mike D'Antoni opted to not have Robert Covington out there as kind of part of his closing lineup. Now, again, the Rockets did substitute everybody out with about 2 minutes left to go, and they kind of threw in the bench reserves and, you know, emptied the bench out. But Covington wasn't out there, and I thought that was so interesting. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, yes, his defensive impact, has been felt and is being felt throughout the game. But if he's not, you mentioned hesitancy on offense, not pulling the trigger. And that's something that I've highlighted so many times with this Rockets offense, is that that's the worst thing you can do in this offense, is not pull the trigger on what is, you know, a good look in this offense. Or just in general with Covington, some of the decision-making, he had one drive that I will commend him for where he drove the ball in, kind of pump fake the three, drove the ball in, and got that that little bounce pass off to PJ Tucker, who slipped in from the corner for an easy layup. But other than that, there were a couple times where Covington opted to not shoot the ball, kind of drive the ball in. It doesn't ever really look that great when he does that. And I think that decision-making is something that is a bit of a concern, because it shows that he doesn't have the confidence in his shot anymore. And for a guy like Eric Gordon, who has the tools in his bag to be able to, okay, my shot's not falling, I'm going to drive it in, that's fine. But for a guy like Robert Covington, he has to keep pulling the trigger. Otherwise, we're going to get possessions that look a little sloppy, like some of the ones that we saw in game one.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly not the most adept, I would say, on the Rockets at kind of breaking down the defense. I would say Daniel House is certainly a guy who does it a lot more effectively, looks a lot smoother, as it's Eric Gordon. I think it is a kind of thing where Covington is either shoot it or make that quick pass, and you're moving the ball along. And he actually did, I think, have a couple of nice ones, including one where he hit it right to Ben McLemore, who drained the three. It's something I'm not too worried about, but I do agree with you that it's something to watch. You know, he's got to just kind of stay in rhythm and not, you know, think when he's catching it. You know, keep the ball moving, make the right play. And sometimes passing them good shots for great shots is smart, but at certain points you can't keep driving to the lane and not really know where you're going, for sure.
And I think above all else, the key moving forward for the Rockets into game two, and then I want to get to our final point after that, but the key moving into game two is playing with pace. And I think there was a noticeable shift in this first game where at about the 5 minute mark, maybe the 4:30 of the first quarter, where when the Rockets started their first bench substitutions, there was the beginning stages of the game were just very messy on both sides. It looked like it was going to be a very slow kind of slugfest, the exact type of game that OKC wants to, you know, battle out, to duke it out with its opponents. And that favors the Thunder greatly. But then the bench unit starts getting subbed in. And that's when we saw the Rockets start picking up the pace. And I remember, because I wrote my notes down, there were about three or four possessions in a row where suddenly there was a noticeable shift offensively in the pace of the game that much more favored the Rockets. And that's when they went on their eventual, it was like a 12-0 run to wrap up the first quarter and leading into the second quarter. And then eventually OKC kind of bounced back from that run a little bit. They go back and forth. Rockets still carry a 16-point lead into halftime. But it was that push at the end of the first quarter where they made the transition, where they were like, okay, we're playing OKC basketball right now by playing slow, getting these half-court sets, not getting out in transition. We need to pick up the pace. And that started, that energy came from the bench unit. So I think the key has to be come out and play with that energy from the get-go in game two, rather than waiting for your bench unit to come in and inject that life into the offense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, certainly. And that's kind of been a directive for the Rockets. I remember even in kind of late July when we first started talking to them, it was a kind of situation where Mike D'Antoni and Russell Westbrook, you know, they kept stressing, we really need to push the pace to win. And that is really when they played their best basketball last night. And it's not necessarily even a function of pushing the pace to get fast break buckets. Sometimes it's a matter of, you know, if you get into a half court set and you can start a higher in isolation at 18 seconds instead of 12 seconds on the shot clock, right? That kind of gives you some more opportunities to make some plays, get some open shots, or even allow Harden to kind of reset and get another attack at an isolation situation. So I think the Rockets will definitely continue to push the pace a little bit. Their transition defense has started to improve a little bit, although it's not great. But once again, against City, it's the kind of situation where a track meet does favor the Rockets, even though that's not necessarily the case, I think, for every opponent they're going to have in the postseason.
Now this last one, this last thing that I've got to talk about with you is, and we kind of, you mentioned it very briefly earlier, but the idea that if Houston goes up 2-0, so they take this game, do the Rockets consider holding out Westbrook even longer to make sure that he is 100% ready to go, going into a potential matchup with, more than likely, I want to say the Lakers, even though they lost game one in pretty disappointing fashion, I'm still going to give the edge to the Lakers in potentially, in probably winning that first round series against the Blazers. I'm sure they'll bounce back and have a very dominant game two performance. But that being said, do the Rockets consider sitting Russell Westbrook for the remainder of this series if it looks like they kind of have the series in hand by the end of game two?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think there's a chance of it, although I would caution that it just might be the case anyway. That's where I'm kind of leaning in that. Westbrook might be out for sure, at least through game four. And then, right, if it's 3-1 or something like that, they'll hold him, perhaps even if it's 2-1 and Russ is ready to go. But it doesn't seem like a situation where Russ is going to be returning to the four or sprinting to the four anytime soon. You know, he's still kind of doing stationary drills. He's not really running all that much. So it might just be a coincidence, but I do think it's a fair point that either 2-0 or 3-1, the Rockets will continue to kind of sit Russ and be cautious with him.
Okay. All right, Michael. Well, I thank you very much for your time joining us here today. Go ahead and let our listeners know where they can check out all your content at.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at mshap2, or you can find my work i.com/NBA/Rockets.
All right, Michael, again, thank you so much for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right. Now be sure to stay tuned throughout the week as we continue to preview and break down each game in the series as we always do here at Locked On Rockets. How are you feeling about the series? Follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin and tell me, let me know how you're feeling about what's going on out there in the world of basketball. You can talk to me on the Twitter sphere, but for today's show, that's going to do it. So as always, thank you so much for listening and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.